My name is Abish. I don't really have a pronoun like usage. I do prefer they, them, but I'm chill with anything.
My name is Fane. My pronouns are she, they. But I am excited to meet like another like person, like another poly person.
I was gonna say,
especially like someone that uses they, them pronouns. Because like, I don't know, like it's just not like there's, you know, you have the Fakaleithi community, but then you don't really have a non-binary community.
Yeah,
you know, it's like you, the third gender is very aware, but I guess like the, like, I guess how deep you can go into that, like into that aspect.
I always, like, every time I was researching, like, Fakaleithi community, I guess we should probably clarify what that is. Yeah. So both me and Fane are Tongan, and in Tongan culture, we have Fakaleithis who are male at birth, and then they're either, like, no gender with a more feminine side, or they are, like, they are women. So, but, like, I feel like sometimes there's, like, a disconnect sometimes because they are very comfortable in that feminine identity, and I like sometimes I don't exactly feel that way.
Yeah,
and it's very difficult too because I also realize there is a perception of like we are perceived as poly women, as like Tongan women.
Yeah and I think that's like why my pronouns will always kind of have she, they instead of transitioning into utilizing just they, them.
Yeah,
just because like not even in like, I mean, in the Western world, you know, my pronoun, like, people will see me as a woman of color.
Yeah.
But then in my own community, they're only going to see me as a Tongan woman.
Yeah.
And, like, even just explaining it to my family, like, you know, it's kind of, like, a very basic understanding that they have of my pronouns where I just kind of tell them, like, oh, like, it just means, like, I use whatever pronouns I want. Like, people can call me what they want to.
Yeah.
So it's that, like, very basic, like, explanation that I give them, just so I don't have to kind of get into like
the nitty gritty,
especially because, like, you know, we talked about this a little bit, but with the church, like the church influence, it kind of makes it hard to kind of get through those barriers.
Yeah,
because not only is there that non-Western sense of like that cultural barrier between you and your immigrant parent, but it's also like the spirituality barrier.
So I don't know. It's difficult too because, like, poly parents, they still have that, like, and Pacific parents in general, they still have, like, that deep love for you.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's difficult to cross that boundary for them because they are so, like, deep rooted in their faith. And not that that's, like, a bad thing. Like, it's my parents' faith that, like, prompts them to do what they do and love us the way they do. But it's also difficult to kind of bring your whole and true self to them sometimes.
It's like they can really, like, I guess in regards to like the spirituality, like the spiritual barrier between like you and like a family member that's still in the church, it's, you know, that like you said, like they love you and they're doing it, like how they love you is through that spiritual barrier.
Yeah.
And so it's like pushing through that, they can't see how to love you outside of that barrier.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, it's really sad because it's like you need them to be out there because you're not in that, in that like circle for them, you know? But it's like, you know, that if you kind of push it, I don't know if this is like that for you, like this for you, but for my family, it's like, I don't think they can see themselves outside of a spiritual sense.
Yeah.
And telling them to do that, it's like, it's just kind of like blinding them essentially. Yeah. Like they live through this spiritual lens. They perform through the spiritual lens. And so they love you through this spiritual lens.
Yeah.
And so when you're not, you know, engaged in the church or engaged in that type of spirituality, they're just kind of like, you know that the love is there, but you're not feeling it. It's that disconnect, you know?
Cause it is the thing of people need to be loved in like the way, in a way they understand. And if you don't connect spiritually and if you don't have that spiritual lens like they do, that love just doesn't come through as they want it to. And it's hard because you don't want to lose them or you don't want to like lose that love. So sometimes I feel like, at least me personally, I deal with a lot of inner conflict of like, if I lose my faith, I lose the the love that I have. Or even, like, not even, like, my own personal faith, but even, like, the appearance of faith.
Mm-hmm.
If I lose that, then I
lose
a lot more than I want to.
Well, and it's, like, kind of why, like, you avoid those nitty-gritty conversations.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't avoid those nitty-gritty, like, if you avoid those nitty-gritty conversations, you can kind of, like, I guess, like, hop around, like, the parts of you that, that you know your family won't understand because of that spiritual barrier.
Yeah.
Or, and especially because if their spiritual barrier isn't just spiritual, it's, you know, if you think about it, like, how Tongan culture is so heavily influenced.
Our flag has a cross on it.
Yeah, our flag literally has a cross on it. It's literally representing the blood of Christ. And so it's like, it's really hard to separate your culture, like your identity in a spiritual sense, when your ethnicity is so heavily influenced and tied into it.
Yeah, I always think about that thing of like pre-colonial Tonga.
Mm-hmm.
And like the... Like, there is, like, a certain pride because Tongan, I guess Tonga is one of the only Pacific countries, one of the only countries to, like, not have their monarchy, like, pushed over by, like, colonialism and imperialism. But, like, there was still a heavy, like, cultural colonization of our people. And I think that shows in, like, the fact that, like, the laws against queer people, not even the laws, but, like, even the attitudes against, like, their own family who just happen to be queer.
Well, and it's weird because it's, like, you still see that essence of pre-colonial Tonga in the sense of, you know, the fact that Whakalaeti culture has been able to live on this long with, even despite Christianity, you know? But because of Christianity, like, you know, like you said, like, there's still those laws against them. And there's still the lack of awareness in regards to, like, how do you navigate having someone that, you know, is transgender but isn't Whakalaeti, you know? Like, when you have a trans man, the treatment of trans men are a lot different than trans women because, you know, with misogyny, like, you, trans women are useful, right? Like, in the sense of when you're a woman, you're in the home, you're taking care of the family. But they don't know how to see you outside of... outside of your femininity, which is, I guess, why, like, in the sense of non-binary, it's kind of hard for them to grasp if you're a woman.
Yeah.
Like, being third gender and, like, and telling them that, you know, there's a side of you that, you know, feel like is, that you feel like is more masculine and you don't want to label yourself. They don't understand that.
Yeah.
Because to them, they only know how to use your femininity and your womanhood in the home.
Yeah.
And it's not in the sense, and it's not to say that our culture is deeply rooted in misogyny. Our culture loves deeply, you know, they love women, they love family, like the family structure is huge. It just means that there's some parts of our culture that needs to change in regards to how they view us.
Yeah.
And how they view gender, period.
I feel like too, asking them to change isn't a tall order.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's something that has been done before. Like, again, like, going back to pre-colonial Tonga, like, third gender was not necessarily... It wasn't out of pocket, you know? It wasn't, like, out of nowhere. It wasn't out of nowhere to date someone who was, like, if you're a man, to date a man. It wasn't, like... I don't know. I always think about, like, what I would be like if I didn't live under the pretenses that we have now, as in, like... really heavy church influences, really heavy influences of, like, this is what it means to be, like, really gendered influences, and, like, what is the word I'm looking for? Heteronormative.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious. But, like, really heteronormative influences about, like, how free that must have felt for, like, I don't know, our ancestors, I guess, to, like, be able just to live like that. I'm like, dang, that's crazy.
The amount of things that we could know about our culture, like pre-colonial Tonga or the pre-colonial Pacific, if Christianity didn't, like, erase a lot of our cultural habits and traditions. And it's just, like, you think about the amount of knowledge that we could have in regards to, like, I guess even just, like, the herbal medicine that our people used to use.
Like, going down to, like, little things.
Like, we're missing so much of our, like, pre-colonial culture.
Mm-hmm.
And although, like, and it's sad because I feel like it's not missed as much as it should be, because we're Thoma is lucky that we are not, like, we are a monarchy and that we're self-governing. We're able to say we have, you know, culture, we have traditions, but what about our pre-colonial traditions? What about our pre-colonial culture?
Mm-hmm.
The things that weren't passed down. Like, there's a lot of knowledge there that we're missing. And I think that it all relates heavily, you know, into, like, the little things relate to our queer identities, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if we can't even know how we healed ourselves before, like, how are we supposed to know how we identified before Christianity,
yeah.
if that makes sense?
No, that does. And I feel like in the way that Christianity has been used against, like, I guess our people in the past, it's used in the same way today,
mm-hmm.
to, like, continue that, like, hurt and that, which is, like, really unfortunate, because it's, like, it took me stepping away from the church to realize, like, how beautiful all religions can be, including Christianity,
mm-hmm.
which, like, was a lot, because, you know, it was the same tool that was used
mm-hmm.
to, like, make me feel,
yeah.
like, oh, I might not be normal, and I might not fit in all the time. But, I don't know, it was really unfortunate that, like, how much erasure it's
mm-hmm.
been used to wield. And I don't know if there is, like, a way that we could study or even get back to that, or even, like, I'm not saying that we have to, like, revert back, but, like, even just bring that into, like, our daily lives today would be fantastic.
Yeah. And I think it's just, like, the more avenues you have to connect with your culture, the better.
Yeah.
Because right now, like we said, like, pretty much if you're not in the church, there's not really many avenues for you to celebrate or just, like, embrace your culture.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah.
I mean, I think about it now, like, as an adult, when you're away from home, and if you don't go to church, you're missing out on all of the faivas, like, the baptisms, the,
mm-hmm.
Like, the weddings, the, like, the first birthdays, all
yeah.
of those kind of, they're all, like, normally they're all in a church setting, and so it's, like, when you're kind of, you're, to protect yourself, you're kind of excluding yourself on purpose.
Yeah.
And, like, you're isolating yourself from your community. And it's kind of, it's really hard.
It is. Because it's, like, you still have, like, I don't know if it's like this for you, but, like, my family's still, like, you know, they invite me to things
mm-hmm.
and they tell me to come to things. But it's, like, I know that there would be a lot more opportunities to connect
mm-hmm.
with people from my, like, within my own culture
mm-hmm.
if I still went to church.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't just be my family. It would be,
mm-hmm.
like, friends too, and sometimes I miss out on, like, having that because
mm-hmm.
yeah,
it's not a vibe.
That's yeah, so true.
My name is Fane, my pronouns are she, they, and I'm the home director for Salt Lake City in Circle.
Cool, and my name is Nyx, my pronouns are they, them, and I'm just the youth that visits the Salt Lake house, I guess.
You do more than just visit. You
True.
Also do art.
I do a lot of art. Actually,
yes.
I did do a really important art piece here.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, two, actually. One was the most recent one. My piece that is in an art museum right now. And it's, like, the biggest thing that I've done so far with my art, which is literally, like, put into a museum and be like, hey, this is my art. Come look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Terrifying, first of all, because it's, like, my most vulnerable thoughts and, like, everything plastered onto the wall for everyone to see. And I'm really glad that I have such a, like, a welcoming and, like, open space
mm-hmm.
to do that. That and also just workshops and the supplies, like,
mm-hmm.
it's a great place to be. The art room is a great place to be.
I think, like, was that hard for you, like, to be so vulnerable that way and, like, putting it up, like, out there? Because I don't know if it's like this for you, but, like, I know for me, being vulnerable isn't the hard part. It's knowing that my family will possibly see something that, like, I guess, see me be so vulnerable. Like, it's not the world that's
scaring
me. I feel
like it's both
me.
For me, though, but, like, being vulnerable, because it's, I am absolutely terrified of judgment. And most of my family is in the medical field, mm-hmm. so I have a really high, like, standard set. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I have to do this, I have to do that. I'd also be the first generation mm-hmm. to graduate from college or university if I choose to go. So it's just like, there's so much, like, pressure put on me mm-hmm. to, like, do good.
Do you think you can kind of explain, I guess, like, a little bit about, how... I know that there's that stereotype for, like, Asian families to be so, like, you need to get A's, like, the model minority. So, like, do you feel like that's heavily, impacting you, especially as a queer person?
Oh my god, 100%. Like, I remember it was 8th grade, I believe, mm-hmm. and it was parent-teacher conferences, and my mom is the one who usually goes, and mm-hmm. every time I would go, like, from probably 2nd grade, mm-hmm. I remember being so terrified of my mom talking to my teachers, just because of, like, how, like, I mean, I didn't know what my grades were until then. And I remember I think it was a U.S. history class. It was my U.S. history teacher in 8th grade was talking to my mom about it, my grade, mm-hmm. and was like, oh, your child is doing really well and this and that. And my mom was like, you could have done better. Like, how could I have done better when I've literally, like, gotten the best that I could in that class? And it's just like, you know,
speechless. I was just like
literally speechless. And it definitely plays into how I am as a queer person, because I very much so am a perfectionist and...
Mm-hmm. Well, so, like, if you're a perfectionist and, like, as a queer person, how do you think those intersect?
How I present and how mm-hmm. I identify, because I identify as non-binary mm-hmm. and I only have for maybe not even a year. And I know so many people who've identified as whatever they have now for so long, and it just makes me feel like, am I really non-binary? Am I really... Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, who the hell am I right now? Mm-hmm. I don't know who I am, and it is just like, I don't know why it bothers me that I just don't know who I am, and like, I'm in the process of figuring out who I am, and it's just, you know?
So, like, that perfectionism, it's kind of like, because, like, outside of your queer identity, outside of your identity, you're kind of like, everything's checked off on the checklist, right? But then internally, it's like, the checklist is scrambled.
Pretty much.
And I guess, like, where I don't have that stereotype of model minority in regards to Polynesians, like, that's not a stereotype for us, but it's like, so that's why I'm asking about, like, I guess how that affects your queer identity. And so that's interesting that you say that, like, because you're a perfectionist and because of, like, how that model minority influences that perfectionism, you feel like you have to figure it out right away.
I
feel away.
Like I have to have, like, a set identity, mm-hmm. even though, like, I'm 100% aware that, like, gender is, like, fluid and I don't have to be labeled. Mm-hmm. I feel like it would resonate better with me if I had a label, but mm-hmm. I don't know what that label is.
So the model minority is a stereotype that is heavily pointed towards Asian Americans, that they have to have, that they're the perfect minority in regards to not only do they excel in school, but they also, like, excel in everything that they do.
Extracurriculars. And, like, everything else and mm-hmm. life. And if you don't hold up to your family or your parents' standards, mm-hmm. then it's just like, oh, you're useless. You can't do any of this. You're just like, it's so much pressure. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a really good example of model minority is, like, it's very, very prominent in American culture as well, like pop culture. Like, mm-hmm. I can't think of a TV show or anything like that right now, but, like, I don't know, like, let's just picture, like, some really generic TV show, and there's an Asian character, and usually 9 times out of 10, that Asian character is depicted as, like, the perfect child, and, like, they hold themselves to such a high standard, and...
I guess, like, the half of it would kind of be a good example. Are you familiar with that movie? So it's a lesbian...
The name is, but I can't think of...
It's a lesbian YA movie that's on Netflix, and the character is just, they have straight A's, they are extremely smart and bright, and the model minority is also kind of... The stereotype is also, like, their persona in regards to, like, they avoid selves. Conflict too, in regards to like, they're not going to be, what's a word that I hate using, but they're not going to be ghetto, is the model minority kind of, I guess in a nutshell.
Sure. That reminds me of another movie that I recently just saw, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Mm-hmm.
The main plot of it is basically the character, I forgot her name already, but she is a lesbian and she's Cantonese, I believe, and openly dates her girlfriend. And I think this is set like now, I think. I honestly don't know, but it's, I feel like how I interpret that movie and like the whole plot of it is that you can't ever like be perfect to your parents, even though you try your best and like literally bend over backwards to do everything, especially as a queer person. They kind of don't roll with that.
Yeah.
Let's just say they don't roll with it. And I remember growing up, my mom would always like watch these like almost like tabloids, but they're like TV shows and they're in Thai, and they talk about all these actors and like celebrities back home in like Asia, and they're like, my mom would always be like, oh, you shouldn't be like them, like you shouldn't be like these guys kissing, like, and I just never saw anything wrong with this. It was just like, why was she saying those things? And I'm glad that it didn't get to me.
Yeah, I think it's funny how like when we talk about, I guess, AAPI identity, especially in queer identity, it's kind of hard not to talk about your family and like your parents, because like you literally do everything to appease them. Like, it's such a, the cultures, like there's so many differences between Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, but I think one thing that definitely they have in common is the parental expectations.
Yep.
So heavy and so draining. And it's not in, and it's not like they do it on purpose, you know?
It's because they didn't have the chance to do the things that they had wanted to do, immigrating here or like whatever. And they want us to succeed.
Yeah.
Like the main reason they came here is for us to succeed. And this brings me back to a math teacher that I had freshman year last year. God.
Yeah.
he was Vietnamese and I wasn't doing the best last year, like mentally or like academically as well. And he made me stay after class because this was the, my math class last year was the last class of the day. And he was like, hey, can you stay for a second? And he like talked to me about it and about how like my parents moved here so I could have like a better life, a better future and a better chance and everything. But it's like, I feel like he didn't have the authority to like speak, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just felt like it was just very unexpected from a teacher to
say that
to me.
But it was like, do you think it was because he thought, oh, this is one Asian kid that I can talk to, like about, like, and let them know, like, hey, like.
Yeah, because I was the only Asian kid in the class. And he just felt like it was his need to tell me that as the only Asian person in that class.
Yeah.
And I guess I understand why he told me that, because it was like, he really did want me to succeed. And I definitely am really appreciative that he thought of me that way and that he would, he was worried about me, but the way that he presented it was just like, okay.
Yeah. That's so awkward.
It was really awkward.
I hate that for you. Like if I, like the unsolicited advice from elders in our community.
Oh my God.
Because they just like, they don't even know you. Like they just see, ooh, another brown person or ooh, another Asian kid. Like, let me go and tell them like I'm their parent and remind them that their parent would be disappointed. And it's like, A, that's hurtful. And B, it's even more hurtful because like this random person thinks they have the, like
the
some type of
authority.
Yeah,
so,
the
like
authority. But it's like, I think that also kind of goes into like how our communities also intersect, is like representation, right? Like if like saving face, the elders, they're like, oh, like that's another person that's like in my community, I need to pull them aside so they can save face for us, you know?
That or like whenever you go to the store, like I don't know, like Costco or something, you see another Asian person, you just like don't do anything stupid in front of them, just like you have to like be like, yeah, I'm the perfect child. And
I think it's kind of hard like having to navigate, I guess, being a person of color and interacting with the elders in your community, because it's like the elders in your community, they came before you, right? They pioneered a lot of different, like, different things, like, here in the States for you, even like on a small scale, you know, even. But it's like when they see you, like, they, I don't know what it is, but it's like they want you to, it's like they see you as an extension of themselves. And so that's kind of hard to navigate when you are being literally, like, when people are projecting things onto you just because you're the same race. And so it's hard when, like, you're not only dealing with the outside, like, outside communities, like, I guess, like, Western society, but within your own culture, like, when you guys are navigating that Western society together, they're also kind of, like, holding on to you to kind of keep you as, like, to keep you in, and to, but it's also like, I want to be kept in my community, but I also don't need to be handheld this way. It's like individuality isn't necessarily welcomed, because I don't know if that's how you feel, but I kind of see that in our own Pacific Islander community. I feel
like the extension part kind of like, I see that kind of like extension, like how you, like, elders see you as like the extension of themselves, as like academically. Like, I don't know, like, let's say, like, my aunt, who never got to do the things she wanted to, and she was like, oh, you should go to school and do, like, I don't know, nursing or something like that, as opposed to what I want to do, which is, like, artsy, fartsy design stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you're not going to make money off of that. But then I have a cousin who is a graphic designer full-time, and she makes hella bank. I will tell you right now, hella money. So it's just, like, I guess that kind of shows him, it's like, oh, I can succeed in this career. I can succeed in this different career path that isn't very traditional, I guess, in their sense.
Yeah.
And I think the extension of them, it's like, for them to see me as their extension is like, I will go to school for them. I will go do these things for them. I'll become a nurse for them, or like, you know?
Yeah. And it's like, if you don't, like, they kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm putting like a word, like, words into your mouth, but do you think that they might think that you're selfish if you don't go that, like, certain avenue?
That, or like, it's like, oh, you never do anything, you don't help us with all, because my uncle owns a small business here in Salt Lake, and I used to go there literally daily to, like, help them out and everything, do homework and stuff, like, literally right after school, my aunt would pick me up and drop me off there. It was family owned, family run. Not doing the best, but oh well. but I remember when I started kind of like becoming more independent and like not being there on the daily, they were always like, oh, you never come see us anymore. You never like help us. You never do this. You never do that. But then it's like they just threw out like the past like 8-9 years of me bending over backwards as a small child to like help them do these things that I should not be doing, like translating documents that I also don't know what are saying. Like, it's like, how do I translate this word into my own language? Because it probably doesn't even exist. And they're just like, what?
Yeah. I am thankful I never had to translate documents, but I did have to do proofreading, a lot of proofreading, and have to explain to like family members, like, this is not grammatically correct. this isn't.
And then they don't listen to
the structure, like, doesn't make sense, and they still use it. But it's like, I don't know, having to navigate like being not only like a Pacific Islander or like a person of color, but your queer identity, and then just navigating the human experience is such a, it's such a roller coaster.
It is very much so a roller coaster.
Like, there's one time, like, there's one day where you're, like, very focused. Okay, let me backtrack. It's kind of like you can't focus on one thing at a time, and you feel like you have to.
It's always 40 million things at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then they expect you to do all 40 million.
Yes. And it's just kind of like, but, like, you kind of have to, like, you have to navigate them all at the same time, because these are your identities and they all coexist. And if you don't navigate them, it's like one of your identities is suffering, you know? But it's like, I don't know. It's kind of weird to think about. I guess maybe in a way it's like our own multiverse.
Sure.
All of our different identities are just different variants of ourselves. But
and especially as someone that is still like under the care of my parents, it's like I am a whole different person outside of the house.
Yes.
Like I don't even speak the same language to them. So it's like, who am I at home versus who am I outside of the house?
Well, who are, like, I guess, yeah, like, who are you when you're outside of the house and at home?
Outside of the house, I guess I'm just very, very loud, I would say. I really enjoyed meeting people and talking to people and being able to, like, talk about their own experiences. I don't know what it is about being able to meet so many people, but I enjoy hearing their stories and being able to validate your own experiences, I guess, and validate their experiences and whatnot. I forgot the word, but it's like you hear, you meet this other person and it's just like they've gone through the same things as you, and it's like, oh, we can like both work through this together and we can both like bond with each other over it.
It's hard. Like, I like when you're under your parents' care still, like you kind of have to be a separate person, like compared to like who you are at home, especially because like you said, like getting that validation and also being able to validate another person's story, it doesn't necessarily happen at home. Like no one's really going to validate my queer identity at home. But being able to be outside and
have so many people validate your queer identity is just
like, I attended my first friendship circle like that week when I came. And it was, I'm surrounded by a lot of Pacific Islander people, like all of my friends and family are. And so I have that space for myself in regards to being able to, you know, embrace my cultural identity. But my queer identity is something that I don't necessarily get a lot of validation from or validation for, nor do I even have a dedicated space for it. And so being able to attend my my first friendship circle, and not only just be able to work at InCircle, but being able to attend that first friendship circle, like really reminded me of what you were saying. You know, there's so much power in validating other people's stories and also getting validation from others in a way that's structured and healthy and not boundary provoking, you know? And I don't think that's something that a lot of us like young adults or youth necessarily get in our homes, regardless if we're a like Asian American or Pacific Islander.
Yeah, honestly, for me, I feel like it's the opposite. Like, my queer identity is very validated, like even outside of InCircle, because most of my friends are queer. But I probably have like what, one, two Asian friends, and even then, I probably have like no Laotian friends that are that I'm close to. So it's just like, I feel like I'm very whitewashed and I wish I was closer to my own culture and language. And it's hard because there's not, the Laotian community here is extremely small.
Yeah.
We all know each other and it's like, oh, this person is this person's grandmother and that person sells this at the temple. It's all like, we know each other and then like we see each other out in public. It's just like, a lot of them are very self-centered, I want to say. Because, I mean, I guess it's like, they like to show off the things that they have, and it's like, yeah, go girl, go show off the things that you've worked for and that you've earned, and I don't know, it just gets very annoying because it's like, all up in your face.
Yeah. I hate that you said that you feel like you're whitewashed. I'm just gonna say that because like,
I hate it too. I just, it's so hard to be able to find resources because it's like, if there are resources, they're in Lao, and I can't read Lao. I can speak it though, and I can understand it like when someone speaks it, but I can't read it for the life of me. I wish there were easier resources. I wish it was more accessible, and I wish the culture was more accessible as well. But then like, so many of our elders are dying off, and the culture isn't being passed on. So we're losing so many different traditions, and I wish to include them later in the future when I'm older, and if I even have my own kids, who knows, to be honest. But if I do, I want to pass along those traditions because I wish, because I don't want them to die out, because our language is slowly dying, and kind of makes me sad because I think it's a really fun language.
That like, I don't know, that breaks my heart because it's like, I feel the same in regards to like, I was talking, when we were talking about it with Abish, it was like, you know, a lot of our resources, there's a lot of erasure, and I'm not too sure about Laotian erasure. I'm sure there has been, but I know within like the Pacific Islander community, so many of our languages are dying off, and like, we're such a small percentage of the world, right? And so it's like just kind of seeing that, like, you know, I guess the more assimilated our cultures become to Western culture, I guess like the faster decline there is in our languages and traditions. And so like kind of seeing that from the outside.
It's like the more you fit in with Western culture, mm-hmm. the less you fit in with your own culture. Yeah.
But even then, like even when you're in Western culture, it's like there's a lot of things that are different, you know, that you like, don't know how to navigate or necessarily even know how to just talk about. Like, I mean, I guess like in Western culture, it's a lot easier to find those resources though.
So it's, they're quite literally
everywhere. But the inaccessibility there is to your own cultures, like resources, is just sad. And then kind of what you're talking about, like sometimes your own community isn't the best people to be around sometimes, you know? Sometimes, like, especially if you don't fit in with them. And so it's just, I don't know. I hate that, like, because of those factors that we have to like subject ourselves to being called like something like whitewashed, you know, and whitewashed just essentially means that you aren't a person. It just means that like you aren't the ethnicity that you are, for those of you that don't know what whitewash is, and it's just like, why subject yourself to that own erasure, you know? It's like
you don't really have a choice, you feel.
Mm-hmm. But I think that at the same time though, we do, like, we definitely have the power to say, like, just because like I don't speak Tongan fluently. And I swear, like, three-year-olds speak better Tongan than me, okay? Like, it's awful. And so I just sit and close my mouth and smile. But it's like when, just because of that reason, like, it doesn't mean that I'm any less Tongan, you know? Like, especially because people will, like, in the Western world, they see you as your ethnicity. Like, first, like, straight up, like, they don't see you as like any, like as your other identities. The first thing they see are your phenotypes. And so it's like, we don't have to say and like label ourselves as anything except for whatever we want to. Just kind of like how gender is a spectrum or like fluid, so is culture. You know, culture and ethnicity are all things that you have the power to say like, no, like that's who I am. Like I'm Tongan or I'm Laotian. And I think that if we allow ourselves to label ourselves as whitewashed, just kind of further perpetuates the erasure of things. Labels have power, unfortunately.
Sadly.
I didn't even come out to myself until like freshman year of college. And then I didn't come out to anyone until like sophomore year of college.
Wow.
I'm in my junior year right now. But I think there was always... I mean, there was always like home stuff, mental health stuff that kind of kept me from kind of exploring that. And then it was also heavily drenched and like heavily like in the trenches of the church as well. So like there was a lot that prevented me from coming out to even myself, like when I was your age. And I'm still figuring it out. Like I think I came out as like non-binary this year. Yeah. It's been, like, everything is pretty new.
It was last July for me.
Yeah.
I feel like I changed my name literally 3 months ago.
new to this. Yeah. Yeah, we're all new to this. And, like, I don't know. I didn't even, like, do a name change. And so I'm, like, part of me was, like, am I? Actually, if I...
That's how I felt because I came out as a gay man, or I guess child.
Yeah.
At the age of 12.
Yeah.
Like, I realized I was gay and I was, like, yo... And I was like, and the friends that I had at that time were already pretty supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, I like guys. And they were like, okay, cool. Who's a lucky guy?
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, this person. And I didn't realize until I was Probably last year, yeah, sure. In the past 2 years with quarantine, I was like, am I really a guy?
Yeah, it's just like the general like consensus of like, actually, I don't exactly feel this way.
Yeah, and so I was like, yo, I'm non-binary. And that was last July. And the name that I used before this, which is literally plastered all over in circles like media, which I'm not mad about, because I feel like it shows growth and like development as a person,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
And it was like that name didn't fit me.
Yeah.
And I, every time like I was called that name or like used that name for myself, I was like, is this really me?
Yeah.
And here I am now as Nyx.
Yeah.
NYX.
No, I love that.
I roll with it.
I feel like there's, I don't know. I feel like especially growing up with like that strong sense of like family and like them telling you who you are and like telling you who your ancestors are and all that.
And what you have
there's,
to be.
Yeah. There's like supposed to be an instilled identity in you. And like, and so sometimes, at least for me, it was like a, am I going against who my family wants me to be? Like, am I like, I don't know, like moving away from like my cultural identity as I find myself. And it's like kind of the balance of like individualism in that culture of like, can they really coexist with each other if this was instilled in me since I was a child type of thing.
Yeah, that kind of like plays back into Yun Fane's little discussion about how religion is so tied into like your culture and your language and like how like there's literally a cross on your flag.
Yeah.
That kind of like plays into my own culture as well, because I grew up Buddhist, and I would still say I am Buddhist.
Yeah.
Kind of low-key, but also not. Yeah. But literally, like, the language itself is built off of it, and culture, even our own culture, is literally built off of Buddhism, and it's so, like, hard to, like, separate that, I guess, from your identity and, like, not being able to have the words to describe who you are in your own language.
Like that, okay, because you brought up Everything Everywhere All at Once, and, like, that one scene where she was asking her mom, how do I say that this is my girlfriend for me? Like, how? Like, what is the word for that?
To
like
her grandfather.
Like, yeah, exactly.
And then, and then she was about to, like, just say, this is my girlfriend.
Yeah.
Then her mom interrupted her and was like, this is just her good friend.
Yeah.
This is just her good friend.
Yeah. And it's like that, like, there's not only, like, a internal battle to, like, come to who you are fully with your family, but, like,
a like, cultural battle.
Yeah, there's like that, like it's very physical and verbal as well. It's not just like a internal thing.
I watched in the theater with my friends, and my friends, well, the one friend that I was with their family, and they were all white. And I started sobbing at that one scene, and they were like, are you good?
Yeah, no, there was a lot of, I literally couldn't talk to my friends. I feel so bad. This was a butt move of me, but like I literally couldn't say a single thing after the movie because I was just like physically like so exhausted from it.
The movie
like,
it's exhausting. Yeah, it's very exhausting because, to watch. Like, you gotta have some energy to watch it, to be honest.
And it's also like one of those things, it's like in my wildest dreams I hope that there is a universe where my mom is like, or like at least someone from my family is like fighting for me like that in every universe. And I was like, that is crazy. But like, I don't know. I feel like that is that, it, like you were saying before, that movie spoke to a very specific demographic of like queer people. And then like, especially for queer people of color. And even then, like you're Asian as well. So it's like, dang, just triple like, threat. Yeah. The dad like, made me cry multiple scenes.
Me too.
Like, how do you feel like your identity reflects in your art?
I feel like my identity reflects in my art because perfectionism, it plays huge, huge part in my art because, I don't know, to describe my art into words, it's very Bauhaus. And Bauhaus is just like this really pretentious art school in like the 20s, the 30s, something like that, maybe 40s. I don't know, art history is all a blur to me. But there was an artist that came out of that school. His name was Piet Mondrian, and he was a Dutch artist who worked off of this other dude's like way of how he saw art, which was like, it was just like pure color and form. And this one piece that I recently did for the art museum, actually, the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art, they did this workshop called Out Loud, and it was a 12-week workshop series where queer high school students all around Utah are able to apply, and there are 14 of us who came together and learned all these new things in these workshops and made art. And my one piece there, see, it's just this big, well, it's displayed on this big black like thing of wood, mm-hmm. but the actual work itself is this little board, and it's painted white, and then there's a red, blue, and yellow square, and then the biggest one is a gray, like, kind of like almost like the walls in this room. Mm-hmm. This, it's like a almost like heather gray kind of like,
yeah,
square. And it's all straight lines. There is no like imperfections or anything. And I feel like, and even the name of it, Impurity Over Purity, but it's a slash because I feel like that was fancier. Impurity slash purity or over, I guess. But
yeah,
even the title itself plays into how, like, being the model minority, it plays a lot into that. And, like, having to be perfect, everything has to be perfect. And, like, my identity has to have a label. And
yeah,
I guess that's how it plays into my art.
Like, not only do you have to find perfection in, like, the little things, but, like, even in the big things that you put in for the public, basically, has to resemble perfection in a way, which is so difficult because, like, it's art, and it's like that. Oh, there's always that argument of like, well, what is art?
What is art? Yeah.
And I was like, well, this art is perfection.
This reminds me of a conversation that I had with a now In Circle intern here.
Mm-hmm.
She talked about how she could also literally just make the same thing that I made, but how is it? Why is it so like important that I did it?
Yeah.
And why is it so good? And why is it so like different from how she could do, because it's just four squares on a piece of wood,
mm-hmm.
right? And she could totally paint that, like,
yeah,
masking tape and paint, that's it, we're done.
I think going along with like art history, like that's what makes certain art pieces so important. Like important is the people behind it and the ideas behind it and the movements and the, like what it represents, and it's something that's so intangible, like we can't exactly like put our finger on it, we can't exactly grasp it, so that's why it's so important, because it's those things that we can't grasp and it's those things that we can't see that kind of pushes us to ask like those big questions of like, oh well, who am I and then what is this, like let's examine it and break it down as to why this is so important type of thing. And I feel like art is supposed to do that. Art is supposed to like, yeah, it can like look pretty and invite you into a home or make a space look bigger. But like at the end of the day,
but then there's a whole story behind it.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like there's always been art that pushes ideas and ideals that makes people question the bigger things. And I don't know if that's what your art does, even if it's just like four squares on a piece of wood, then it did what it's supposed to do.
It speaks a lot to me.
Yeah.
And It's formalism,
mm-hmm.
where as opposed to looking at what the painting is, you look at what the painting invokes in you and why is this here? Why is this there? And like, why is it composed in this way?
Yeah.
And how do these like compositions play with each other in your mind and create harmony and like rhythm, I guess?
Yeah.
That's formalism, and I think a lot of my art is very formalist, I guess. And I feel like that's just my excuse of like, oh, I hate drawing figures and like actual landscapes.
Yeah.
And I guess it's my own thing. It's my style.
And I feel like too, like, I mean, going, I guess this is going back to like model minority myth and everything. Like, how, because I know Fauna asked you a lot about this with like, specifically exploring art, like I feel like it's always been welcomed for like white people to explore the arts and explore and like basically be like pioneers of artist movements. And so like when it comes to like that, like how do you feel about that? Because I know there's not exactly a ton, I guess there are a good amount of like Asian artists, but again, like that's like looking at Asia as a whole and not like specifically like from Laos type of thing.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like there's a pressure on you to perform not only because like for your family, but because of like as a person of color, you're always kind of the face of your people type of thing. Do you ever feel like that type of pressure, or is it more just like...
I feel like I do definitely kind of feel that pressure because, mm-hmm. again, if I do go to college, which I kind of already am, I would be the first generation
yeah.
out of the rest of my cousins to also go to college and have a yeah. decent education. And I feel like that also plays into, like, even my own art and the things I make, because it's, like, in art classes and things like that, it's like, ooh, I don't like making things in public because it's, like, all my thoughts out on display for anybody to see and be like, oh, yeah. what the hell is this? I hate it. It's just like, ugh, yeah. I hate it. But I guess you kind of have to embrace that. Not everyone's going to like your art and not everyone's going to think you're perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that plays back into how I low-key kind of am, like, not like what my parents want me to be.
That's
understandable. And I never will be what they want. Ooh, I phrased that weird. I never will be what they want me to be.
Yeah.
I never will be what they expected yeah. me to be.
No, I definitely, like, because I feel like, you know, we have very different families, but, like, I understand that completely because, like, my family has had a very specific vision for, like, you know, like, this is where you're going to be and this is what you're going to do. Was. Yeah. So my family is LDS. And so, like, even just, like, things like making temple ordinances, getting married in the temple, having a family, like, even if they don't expect me to get, you know, the perfect grades. I mean, my grandma still expects me to get the perfect grades. She very much does. But, like, everyone else in my family, like, that is their bare minimum expectations for me, is to, like, do those religious things. And I was like, I can't even hit the bare minimum. Like, I know that it would be hot dog universe. If we're talking about everything everywhere all at once, the universe in which I make those temple ordinances and stay within the church and, like, am a strong, faithful member.
Would it be the hot dog
one? It would be hot dog finger universe, yeah, for sure. And it's really difficult because there's that pressure of, like, I can't even fulfill their basic expectations. So, like, how is it going to play out when they see that? Because I don't know if I necessarily, I've come to a point in my life where, like, I won't sit them down and tell them that, but they're eventually
to, like, learn for themselves.
Yeah. They're eventually going to like get the hint, like once I like graduate and move away and type of thing that like, oh, this isn't something that they're going to do, is it? So it's kind of like a ticking clock, I guess, of like, when it kind of settles for them that I'm not going to be what they want me to be, or I'm not going to live the way they expect me to live. But yeah. I hope you don't feel that ticking clock. And if you do, that's okay. Cause it's like,
I guess I don't really have that much of like the religious pressure, but
yeah,
it's more like, honestly, it's just academic, to be honest, and like society, yeah. because it's like my family really cares a lot about how we present to the public.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you can't do this or you can't do that. Or I feel like I've had to suppress myself and yeah. my own culture who I was in public, because it's like, yeah. people would judge you.
Yeah.
People would judge you for it because
I feel like, I mean, for, this is like Tongan specifically, but like many Tongans were very loud people. And like,
And it's like, don't speak don't speak loud, because like, I will probably end up start like yelling.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then like the white people in the corner just be like, are you guys good? Are you guys like arguing?
So,
like,
yeah.
No, we're just like, having no, this a is fun just little conversation.
At the like this is just at the level at which we talk. And I feel like, so like the way my family works is like both of my like immediate grandparents, they went to like college and they did like the whole university thing, which is why I think they expect so much from me that way. But like, I also have like extended cousins, which is like not really a concept, but like definitely learned what that was when I was like 12, you know. It was way too old to be learning what that was. Okay, sorry. But like, my extended cousins, they're a lot more of that quote-unquote Polynesian stereotype, you know. They're very like confident, they're very loud, they're very like exuberant. And when I was younger, I was so kind of jealous of that, because I never really had that because my grandparents, you know, they went the traditional route. And so they wanted that for me. They wanted me to like learn English first. They wanted me to like,
because they thrive really... that way. And exactly. Then it's like, oh, you're going to thrive this exact way too.
Exactly.
Because they know you're going to end up in a good spot if you do the same exact thing.
Yeah. And so I don't know, there was like a kind of, like what you were saying before, like I definitely like had to, I monitored myself and I policed myself into being what I thought would get me into like the good places. And it did, arguably, you know, I'm in school, it's paid for, but like there's so much that I'm still like learning, and I'm still learning how to be more of my authentic self around my family, which is really difficult because it's, for the longest time, I would show my best face to them. Like I was okay being a little bit louder with friends, and I was okay being a little bit more extroverted with friends, but it was always when I came back to my family that I was like, I need to be this,
and this. Hold yourself in.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Like kind of like monitor myself to the point of like, oh, that's actually not who I am.
I guess that's how I kind of feel too, low key, with like, even outside of like the house, I'll literally just be like, probably be the loudest person in the room. And it's just like, Nyx, please shut the hell up. It's just like, my bad. Like, I don't even notice it, which is a thing.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this is just normal.
Yeah.
And it's really embarrassing because like sometimes I'll be on the bus home or something, and like my dad will be like, where the hell are you? And like, first of all, his phone sucks, so he can't hear me.
Yeah.
And we already talk super loud, so it's just like times five, and everyone's just like, who?
Yeah. He's like, you are sticking out more than you should.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something, like, maybe that's also why I monitored myself so much.
Is because you stuck out so much, you didn't want to stick out more.
Exactly. Like, looks, height, stature, like, already, without me saying a word, I'm sticking out, you know? And so, but then once I open my mouth, then we're done. Then we're done. Then it's like, oh, yeah, there's no ignoring Abish because they're right there and I can't, like, they see me. Yeah. But yeah, it's like, and it's so... I don't know. I think that was another thing where I got jealous of like my like white friends, because I was like, you have that luxury. Yeah.
My parents really, oh my God, what was the word? I just had it. Kind of like sheltered me. They definitely did shelter me a lot because I am the only child.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, this is our only chance.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing all my cousins, like, having sleepovers and everything and, like, having so much fun. And I was just there just like, hey, bye, guys. I'm going home now.
Yeah.
This is, like, why couldn't I do those things? And it was because, like, I don't know. I just feel like it was, like, my mom's side of the family. And I'm more closer to them than I am. Well, I guess I'm pretty close with both. But it's, like, I spend more time and I talk to more of my dad's side.
Yeah.
But then the younger side where there's more people, where I guess, like, literally, like, five kids that are around my age, like in that rough like 12 to like 19.
Yeah.
And I feel like those are the like people that I can like kind of like resonate with like culturally, because it's like, oh, we're kind of like dealing with the same things growing up and living in a white dominated community.
Yeah.
And schools, and like,
I think that's what really made me grateful for college. Like, yes, I've changed my major like 7 times. Yes, I've failed a few classes, but like I've had the chance to like be okay with standing out, because it's like, it's just you.
Yeah.
And like, again, I only live in Provo. My family's in Salt Lake, but like there's that like 40-minute barrier, like still gives me space to like really explore like who I am and being okay with who I am in all aspects, which is really nice and like much needed from my childhood self.
I honestly am really excited to see the person that I become when I'm older. I'm also just excited to be able to not have the restrictions that I have now, which is like, I guess, my parents and my family.
Yeah.
Because it's like, once I'm 18, it's like, I can be who I want and not, like, I feel like I'm going to be like, so like hashtag edgy emo and be like, oh, I'm not going to like have to worry about the consequences. But like, I guess that's what it is. It's like not having to face the consequences of being my authentic self in front of my family, because I am such a different person in front of my family, like even my own like parents and like extended family, I am a whole different person. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if I were to be who I am everywhere, like myself now and myself with my extended family and my parents and everything, mm-hmm. I would get a lot of backlash from my family.
Yeah.
And they could do things now. They could like say things to me, they could do things to me now, and I would have to live with it.
Yeah.
But I feel like once I'm of legal age, I could, you know?
Yeah. Like, it is very much like that for me. Like, you know, sometimes, like, they'll see, like, oh, a new tattoo or new piercing, and then, you know, they'll have thoughts and comments, but, like, at the end of the day, I, like, go home to my own little bed, and, like, I don't know, there's, like, there's space and time for me to process, like, oh, yeah, I stand by this tattoo, or I stand by this thing that I want to do, or I stand by my identity, and I don't know, it's sometimes hard, because... yes, they sacrifice so much for you, and they still continue to, but there's also that needed boundary, which I don't think is very...
distinct.
Yeah, and it's not very popular among parents in general, but, like, specifically parents who had to go through so much for you to, like, even just be here, to have, like, that boundary of...
And I guess that's, I feel like that's where a lot of my, like academic and, like... mm-hmm. pressure in general, I just feel like that's where a lot of it came, which is like, because both my parents immigrated here and mm-hmm. they did have quite the experience, I will say it that way, and they want me to thrive.
Yeah,
they want me to like not go through the things that they did, basically, and mm-hmm. I'm really glad that they chose to give me this life here in the US and everything, and I guess the way that they, like, channel it to me is a little, like...
It's a little counterintuitive.
Yeah.
But it makes sense because they, again, they see it as, like, their one shot of, like, to do it right.
Yeah.
Which is, and I think the thing is, too, like, no matter who the parent is, they will always have an idea of what they want for their child. And some parents are, like, a little bit more specific, and some are very, like, open. Always like, oh, as long as my child's happy, as long as my child's healthy type of thing. And I feel like kind of coming to terms with your parents' expectations for you is a process.
I think embracing the fact that I will never be what my parents wanted me to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think coming to terms with that, embracing that I'm nowhere close to what they want me to be, has definitely helped a lot.
Yeah,
in realizing who I am, what I want to do, and even my art. Like, you can see a lot in, like, even though I've made probably like a good like 5 or 6 pieces that I would consider like actual finished pieces, that
mm-hmm.
I feel like they really show who I am, and I feel like that's a very big really big occurrence in a lot of my work, is my identity and like myself, because I wasn't able to express myself or do the things I wanted to do when I was younger.
Yeah.
And now that I am a little more independent,
mm-hmm.
I'm able to do those things, and it's like I am who I wanted to be when I was younger.
That, I think about that concept all the time. Of like, mostly I know for sure younger me would be rolling in their grave if they saw who I am now, because again,
younger me would have been terrified of me.
Yeah, exactly. Younger me would have been so scared of me right now. They would not have looked my way. But like, it's coming to terms with like, well, younger me also was trying to live up to everyone's expectations. Younger me also like held this belief.
I also honestly feel like I should not have had to gone through so much of that academic stress at the age of freaking 9.
Yeah.
First of all.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's not like what Fauna was saying earlier, there's not really a stereotype for like, oh, Tongans are really good in school, or Polynesians in general. It is very much, we are very much one of those minorities who get casted under your physical ability will determine your value and what you can bring to society. So like, you know, people typically think of like, oh, football players, volleyball players, those are the only 2 sports you can play apparently. or like, and if it's not sports, then it's like, oh, you're probably not doing too well in school type of thing.
Or even just how you appear too.
Yeah, exactly. So like, there was never really like a, I guess there's no real pressure besides from my grandparents to do well in school. But there was more of like, when I did do well in school, it was more like people were surprised. And I was just like, well, good to know that.
And even then, when you were doing good in school, they were just like, they didn't have anything to say.
Yeah.
Even though they expected that from you. And then when you meet that expectation, they're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah. No, cool. It was like, well, you did what you're supposed to do. And I was like, okay, but I did really good.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. But yeah, like, I think it's funny because, like, I'm not physically the most talented. So, like, again, I don't fit into, like, that Polynesian Pacific Island, like, trope of
you're going to, kind of like, you know. I'm not the smartest, like, academically. Like,
yeah.
I'm kind of just, like, I'm not the best. Like, so math, it's like, I could live without it.
Yeah. So it's very hard. Like, not only are you not living up to, like, expectations of your parents or, like, Western society.
But maybe even to yourself.
Yeah. Like, because at first when I was younger, it was like, oh, I have to do this and I have to be good at this. So it's like, as those changed, I was more able to come to accept myself because I was like, yeah, you're not the most physically talented, but your brain is working. It's working hard. And so it was like coming to terms with like, oh, I'm not going to really fulfill anyone's expectations. So I might as well make my own. And the good thing about making your own expectations is that you can change them.
Yeah.
So you fit them occasionally.
It was super fun to chat with you and Fane, and to hear you and Fane also talk about, like, resonating and, like, validating each other's own experiences.
It was so needed to talk to her, but yeah.
It was super fun to see.
Yeah, thanks.